Okay. We will call the Health and Human Services Division back to order, carrying on from this morning's. And as said this morning, we will start with public testimony. I think we have about 12 testifiers thus far that have signed up to testify, but you need not have signed up. We will open it up for additional testimony when we're finished with those that have signed up, but I'll go in the order folks signed up to start with. And I would ask testifiers to keep their comments to in the ballpark of 3 minutes. We have Bruce Nelson with ARM, the first signed up. Is Bruce around?
Yes, I am, sir.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the division. I am Bruce Nelson with ARM. We are an association of providers who support people with disabilities across the state of Minnesota. Want to say thank you. I want to say thank you for two things. First, you provided a 5% increase for home and community-based services for people with disabilities and older adults. Excuse me, I just ran in. And what that means is quality services for our most vulnerable people, people with disabilities, older adults. It means quality of life for those people, as well as the caregivers who are struggling right now to support their families and themselves, and it provides stability to providers. I noted Senator Eakin isn't here right now. The chief offered the bill. I want to thank him, Senator Rosen, the ranking minority member, and in fact, all of you. I went back to the office and I looked at the various clone bills, and I noticed that now with you, Mr. Chair, is carrying the bill. Every one of you signed on as a co-author on the 5% bill, and thank you so very much. The second item is disability waiver rate system language from the Coalition of Advocates and Providers that appears on pages 139 to 150. As you recall, last year passed legislation required by CMS that moves county or moves payments in the waiver system from a county-based system to a state-directed. It entails the reshuffling, if you will, of $1.7 billion affecting the lives of 34,000 people. It was implemented on January 1st, and with any program of this significance and magnitude, there are problems. There are significant problems that we didn't anticipate. And Mr. Chair and members of the division, you have provisions in there that will help us to move forward to correct some of the implementation blips and do our very best to assure this new payment system addresses the needs of those 33,900 people with disabilities who are supported under the various waivers and DT and ASIA. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Next, we have Sue Abderholden. Welcome to the committee again, Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. I just wanted to thank you for including the crisis team language so that we can actually intervene earlier. Thank you also for including the training for the Commitment Act. And thank you for including the money for the ICHRS program that would have we would have lost, especially in rural Minnesota. I know you weren't able to do everything. I really appreciate, though, what you were able to do, and we'll be back next year for supportive housing and NEMT as well. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Abderholden, for working with us on the transition planning requirements as well that are carried in.
Yes, thank you for that. Sorry.
Next is Mary Braddock with Gillette Children's.
Good afternoon, Chair Lowry and committee members. I'm Mary Braddock. I'm a pediatrician and the Associate Medical Director at Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. We want to express our thanks for the repeal for the 10% fee-for-service hospital rate reduction in the Omnibus Health and Human Services Finance Bill. Even though Gillette, as a children's hospital, was exempted from this rate cut, we are very grateful for the additional dollars that will flow to larger hospital community, as we are all trying to determine the impact of the much-needed rebasing, conversion to ICD-10, and change to the APR-DRG system. Proper funding assists all hospitals in providing needed care to the patients that we all serve. Gillette is a pediatric hospital that specializes in high acuity services such as trauma, inpatient rehabilitation, and other treatments for short and long-term disabilities. We serve patients from every county in Minnesota, and we have clinics in the metro area and outreach clinics throughout greater Minnesota. Gillette offers patients a lifetime of care for complex conditions such as cerebral palsy, severe epilepsy, and spina bifida. Patients with complex conditions require multiple encounters with a variety of specialists to manage their health, participate in their families and communities, and enjoy their lives. They often require multiple surgeries and hospitalizations throughout their lifetimes. As a pediatric hospital and a specialty hospital, we see patients that are considered, even at the federal level, medically complex and even fragile. The acuity of our patients is one of the highest of all independent children's hospitals in the United States. Gillette also has one of the highest medical assistance populations in Minnesota. 58% of Gillette's patients are eligible for medical assistance. Of that 58%, approximately two-thirds are in the fee-for-service system. Unfortunately, state payments for serving this population don't come even close to covering our costs. Our medical assistance fee-for-service reimbursement is 44 cents on the dollar of our cost. PMAT reimbursement is 65 cents on the dollar. Long-term, this is not viable. We are somewhat anxiously watching this payment reform process unfold. We are very grateful for the language in the omnibus bill, which gives authority to the commissioner of the Department of Human Services to make adjustments if needed for multiple services, including pediatrics. If you picture a bell-shaped curve, Gillette's patients are on the far right of that bell-shaped curve. I guess for you guys, the far right would be over here. For both cost and complexity of their medical conditions. Because of the high complexity of our patient population, we have the highest rates per admissions in the state. Basing rates on a statewide average will bring the rates paid to Gillette down dramatically. While moving to an APR-DRG system may somewhat help Gillette's medical assistance rates, we predict that this will in no way compensate for the movement to an average statewide rate. So we are grateful for the flexibility in the language of the bill to make adjustments if needed for pediatrics, along with the other services listed. We also appreciate the concept of the language that caps increases or decreases at 5%. However, with our high medical assistance population and high fee-for-service population within medical assistance, Gillette would be impacted dramatically and negatively by even a 3% decrease. We want to thank you all for your hard work on payment reform in this omnibus bill and also for working hard to protect Minnesota's vulnerable patient populations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Braddock. Next on the list is Shannon Cunningham with the MNA. I guess we're going to have, and Eric Haugy. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you. Shannon Cunningham with the Minnesota Nurses Association. Chair Lori and committee members, my name is Shannon Cunningham. I'm with the MNA, and we represent over 20,000 registered nurses who work in Minnesota's hospitals, correctional facilities, public health departments, and state-operated services facilities. We appreciate the work of Senator Lori in putting together a financial plan that has many unique challenges as the Health and Human Services budget. And as we all know, it's kind of like an art form. We want to thank you for including the long-needed 5% rate increase for home and community-based service providers, and know that this will ensure workers in these facilities are going to receive a well-deserved raise. We also thank you for working to mainstream eligibility requirements for public assistance programs and look forward to working with you to expand uniformity into our state's healthcare services in the future. Unfortunately, we are very disappointed to see that the salary supplements for the Minnesota State Operated Service Program and Minnesota Security Hospital were not included in the budget. We recognize that this is a large amount of money. However, the cost of the item truly reflects its importance. In order to make up for the lack of funding in this area, DHS would have to close many important services provided by the State Operated Services Program that both protect the public and serve those in need. Without funding this item, the Department of Human Services could be forced to close the 7 community behavioral health hospitals, including those in St. Peter, Rochester, and Alexandria. The Child Adolescent Behavioral Health Services in Wilmer, which is a psychiatric hospital that provides assessment, treatment, and aftercare planning to our state's most severe mentally ill children, could also be forced to close. Additionally, the 4 intensive rehabilitation treatment services programs run by the state that provide short-term and transitionary living services to those needing support as they move back into the community could also close. And lastly, drastic reductions will have to be made in staffing at other state-operated services facilities, including reducing over 200 staff working in mental health services, forensics, and at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. While the nurses and other employees in these facilities would lose their jobs, the state would lose much more as it breaks its commitment to moving people out of residential treatment and back into the community. I look forward to working with you to help find a way to fund this important proposal and help keep our commitment to some of the most vulnerable citizens in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Haughey?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Eric Haughey with AFSCME Council 5. We represent 43,000 employees across the state. I'll be very brief and to the point, as Ms. Cunningham covered a lot of the points I was going to make. We certainly understand that you had some very difficult decisions to make this year. And indeed, this bill makes many worthwhile investments in items that are important to the members we represent, the 5% cost of living increase in home and community-based services, and funding for the Community Addiction Recovery Enterprise, for example. But the state is the primary safety net provider for individuals who often have nowhere else to go and are some of the hardest to serve Minnesotans may, under this budget, have even fewer programs to turn to that are willing and able to serve them. The lack of critical salary supplements for state-operated services and the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, as the governor has recommended, will result in over 200 layoffs and the closure of many of the facilities across the state, as Ms. Cunningham mentioned. I'm sure my members could attest to the difficult clients that they serve, and of course they are concerned about their own jobs. Who wouldn't be? But this is larger than any one employee in any one facility. This is about the common good and the commitment we have made as a state to taking care of our most vulnerable citizens. I look forward to working with you over the next several weeks to find a solution so that Minnesota can continue to provide these necessary services, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Haughey. Next, we have Rochelle Westland with AMC. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rochelle Westland, and I'm the Health and Human Services Policy Analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the committee for including the Health and Human Services Administrative Simplification Provision as part of the Omnibus Finance Bill. This provision will provide uniformity and simplification across MFIP, GA, MSA, and GRH programs, and will result in better customer service, enhanced client outcomes, and is essential for advances in human services technology systems modernization. We also would like to thank Senator Lori and NAMI for working with us to improve language on the mental health authority statute, and look forward to continuing working to make sure that those transitions are smooth. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Westland. Next, we have Patrick Ness with the Wilder Foundation. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Patrick Ness, Public Policy Director with the Amherst H. Wilder Foundation in St. Paul. Just want to extend deep thanks and gratitude for your work on the MFIP workforce education investment. This will mean education and training for thousands of parents trying to make that ladder out of poverty work for them. MFIP was originally designed to expect work, support work, and reward work, and that has deteriorated over the years. This is a step in the right direction in both supporting and rewarding work. I will actually let the next testifier speak to another area of deep gratitude.
Ms. Ellis, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Marie Ellis, and I'm representing Catholic Charities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. And Patrick and I are up here together representing a number of advocates in the room, advocates statewide, and youth experiencing sex trafficking and homelessness statewide. And we would just like to offer a very hearty and sincere thank you for including money for the Homeless Youth Act and Safe Harbors in your bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Michael Scandrett with the Safety Net Coalition. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Michael Scandrett, and we have some other testifiers we'd like to add to our Safety Net Coalition testimony. I'm with the Minnesota Healthcare Safety Net Coalition, and the coalition represents nonprofit providers who service the safety net, who primarily provide services to low-income, disadvantaged, and culturally diverse populations as a primary purpose of the organization. There's many things in the bill that we appreciate. I'm not going to touch on things that others might get at a little bit more, but in three particular parts of the bill, we really want to express our thanks to the chair and to the members of the committee. One is recognizing that there are still some uninsured people out there, and until we get that kind of everybody into the system, we have a problem with uninsured people going without access to care, and there's a provision in the bill that would establish some coverage for the most needy part of that, which is uninsured children who are not eligible for any other programs but have serious medical conditions that require attention. The second provision in the bill is kind of recognizing that even that program will take a little time to develop. The bill includes some kind of bridging grants to safety net providers to provide some resources to cover part of the costs of the uninsured patients that they continue to serve until, again, we can have a more permanent solution. And then finally in the bill, I appreciate the section that looks at trying to improve the way statewide quality measures are reported for healthcare providers so that we can begin to look at the quality measures divided by race, ethnicity, language, and other factors that have an impact on health and quality of care but currently are not apparent from the statewide measures. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ginny, and she can add to my testimony.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ginny Johnson, and I'm with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. And we are the association representing the 17 federally qualified health centers in Minnesota. We are also a member of the Safety Net Coalition. And we would like to echo what Michael had just stated and also offer our thanks for including some grant subsidies to safety net providers in recognition of the uninsured folks still in Minnesota who will be needing access to health care. We really appreciate this bridge support to providers who currently serve and will continue to serve these uninsured patients while we continue to work toward a coverage program for these folks. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Mr. Scandrett, you said you had a couple more, just the one? Or?
Oh, this is fine. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
Next, there's a lot of people in the room. Remember
that's, that's fine. Just trying to not go too fast. Toby Pearson and Carrie Thurlow from the Long-Term Care Imperative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Thurlow with Aging Services of Minnesota, also here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I think we want to join in the chorus of thank yous today and specifically want to mention four items that were particularly important for senior care providers here in the state of Minnesota. The first would be the 5% increase for home and community-based services. I know you've heard about that from a number of testifiers today, but we want to join in thanking you for that much-needed increase. For our members in particular, that will help elderly waiver providers and others and keep seniors out of more expensive nursing homes. Also, we want to thank you for the targeted increase for care centers to help offset what we anticipate to be an impact to an anticipated increase in the minimum wage. This will certainly be appreciated and will help those nursing homes most impacted by that anticipated change in law yet this session. Two other items that we would point out, the investment in critical access nursing homes will be very welcome, particularly for those isolated rural nursing homes out in greater Minnesota that are financially struggling. We look forward to working and getting that news out, and that will be very welcome. And then finally, funding for the moratorium exceptions process for nursing homes. We have a lot of old nursing homes in need of repair, and keeping that fund replenished will be important so that we address our physical plant needs out in that particular area of the safety net as well.
Mr. Chair, members, Toby Pearson, Care Providers of Minnesota, Long-Term Care Imperative. As Ms. Thurlow mentioned, we recognize this is a supplemental budget year, and these are very important steps you're taking in this bill to retain access and to make some targeted investments in senior services. We would like to mention that we look forward to working with you for a longer-term solution that can be developed in partnership with the administration and any interested legislators, as we feel the need to finally address the ongoing concerns of nursing facilities and the manner in which we fund them. But again, thank you for all your needed investments in this bill.
Thank you both. Rebecca Covington with Minnesota CCD.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Rebecca Covington, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and I would like to thank you for all of your hard work during this very hectic short session and for your support of the 5% campaign. We recognize that you have had very difficult choices to make, and each of you have priorities that didn't make the list. I wanted to take this opportunity to bring attention to an issue that is on our priority list for the disability community, and that is the medical assistance, or MA, income standard spend down. This spend down impacts approximately 12,000 individuals with disabilities and older adults in Minnesota, and requires that these individuals that have an income $1 over 100% of the federal poverty guideline per month, which is $958, spend down to 75% of the federal poverty guideline, which is $719 a month, to live on. This is an issue of equity that needs to be addressed. We hope that you will take up the House position that is included in their Health and Human Services Finance Omnibus Bill, which raises the excess income standard from 75% of the federal poverty guideline to 80% of the federal poverty guideline effective January 1st of 2017. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you. Next, we have Lyndon Gauboy with the Welfare Rights Committee, but they did say they might not be able to be here. Is there anyone take this slot? If not, we'll accommodate them when they come. Oh, Ms. Anderson, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Hi, Jessica Anderson with Children's Defense Fund. And now I don't have any talking points prepared, but I have a feeling that what Ms. Gauboy was going to discuss was the family cap repeal. And in the House Health and Human Services Finance Bill, they did end up including it. And the way that they worded it was that DHS would update their systems if possible, and if they were not able to do it, then they would do it manually. So, we were hoping that would be included in the Senate bill as well, and we hope that they'll be able to reach a deal with the House on that issue. That's all.
Thank you. Next, we have one more signed up, and then I see we'll have some extras, and you're welcome. But we have Lawrence Massa with the Minnesota Hospital Association. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lawrence Massa, and I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Hospital Association, representing 142 member hospitals and healthcare systems. I would like to express our support for the omnibus bill as currently amended. I would also like to thank the chair and committee members, as so many have this afternoon, for taking a proactive approach to modernizing the Medicaid payment system in Minnesota and beginning to address some of the significant issues with current payment rates and current payment mechanics. We've been working collaboratively with the Department of Human Services to try to address the many uncertainties associated with rebasing and other payment changes that must be implemented in the near future. This bill provides us direction and a framework for continuing that work. Our shared goal is a technically sound, sustainable payment system that supports broad access to care for state public program recipients in our state. Thank you again for your hard work on this important issue.
Thank you, Mr. Massa. I see Ann Henry. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center. Last Thursday, Roberta Opheim from the Ombudsman's Office and I testified about our serious concerns on a future repeal of important protections against mechanical restraint seclusion for people with disabilities in home and community waiver services. And I want to thank the chair. That future repealer is not included in the bill, and we are still working on the scope of rulemaking with the department. We're not there yet, but we will keep working. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Henry. Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Larson with the ARC Minnesota. Today I'd like to testify as the co-chair of the 5% campaign. The campaign has been very successful due to the fact that we had such widespread support during this legislative session. This has been we've seen unprecedented cooperation between the disability and aging communities as well as legislators. And so we're very grateful that we were able to get this message across and that we were able to work cooperatively with everyone involved. And so we just want to thank you for that. I also would like to just say that we're looking forward to working with you next year on many aspects of the Olmstead Plan, as well as quality issues that we think Minnesota can make some great progress on during the next legislative session. So thank you very much for your support with the 5% campaign.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Any other public testimony? Seeing none, we will begin entertaining amendments. I've got a couple myself, if members would entertain. The first is a rather technical amendment prepared by staff, a couple of issues found by people that we've worked on. That's the A-12 amendment. Ms. Kavanaugh, could you describe the A-12 amendment as it's being passed out? Or do you want me to take a stab at it? I'll... Or is this some, is this Ms. White's or? Oh, okay. Well, Ms. White, a couple of them.
Sure. On line page 1, line 2, corrects a cross reference. Page 1, line 3 clarifies that the commissioner we're talking about is the Commissioner of Human Services.
I talked to them beforehand.
And Mr. Lebeco.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, page 1, line 5 of the amendment, just requested by the department, it clarifies the part of the consultation services that have been added to CFSS. There's a temporary authorization, and after that temporary authorization, the participant is allowed to receive services only if they're provided consultation services first. So that's just added in there.
And then,
Madam Chair, page 1, line 4 also just corrects the cross-reference.
And Mr. Chair, line 8 is just putting in some repealers in the hospital rebasing.
Okay. Any questions of members on the A-12 technical amendment? Seeing none, all those in...
That's it. Mr. Chair, is this Senator all for technical amendments?
What's that?
Is this all you have for technical amendments changes? Very good.
We've got a crack so staff.
Cheers to them.
Or maybe they're just so tired that they're working on Kathy Sharon's two omnibus bills that they didn't catch things yet.
Still working on. I'm still working on.
On the A-12 amendment, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. I also have the A-1 amendment. This was a just a cleanup of some language regarding supplemental recovery programs, third-party liabilities, brought to me by the health carriers and agreed to by the Department of Human Services. There should be no cost implications to this cleanup language. Any questions of members? Seeing none on the...
We don't have the amendment.
Oh, I'll let you... Sorry. The Supplemental Recovery Program itself allows the Commissioner of Human Services to work on third-party liability issues, and if claims that should have been caught at the carrier level were missed, the Commissioner has the ability to collect on those and deposit them into an account that they have appropriated to them, and this cleans that language up a little bit in keeping with what the carriers asked me to do to clean this up a little bit. We worked with the department, and they agreed this would be a valuable cleanup of this section. Any further questions on the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. That's it for mine. Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have about four. I think none of them too controversial. I'd like to depend on who you are.
A simple little amendment.
Good bill. So I would like to move the A18 amendment.
Wow.
Mr. Chair, as members get the bill, it's just a technical amendment for the Healthy Homes that MDH requested.
Okay, and
it adds the ability to put the local community or the local health boards to receive some of the resources as well as nonprofit organizations. And community action agencies.
And it's the same monies that...
It's the same money. It just allows the local health
MDH
boards to
confirm there's no cost to this amendment. Yes. Okay. Any further questions on the A18 amendment? Do we need to be more specific than A18? Does that work for staff? Okay. So seeing no further questions, Senator Hayden moves the A18 amendment. On that amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have the A22 amendment, and I'm hoping that Ms. Kavanaugh or someone could help us with the numbers. But what the actual...
I've got one announcement. We hadn't been able to get on TV, and this room is a little bit more crowded. It's kind of a big... deal to many in the state of Minnesota. So we have overflow now in room 107 with audio only for people in the audience who are trying to follow what we're doing, for anybody who's interested in that. Just an announcement. Sorry. Senator Hayden.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the A22 amendment. I move the A22 amendment. And once again, if I could get Ms. Kavanaugh to help me with the numbers, but let me explain it. This is in the House bill. The Somali community in particular and immigrant communities have come to us identifying mental health issues, significant mental health, undiagnosed mental health issues that they have in their community. And this is an appropriation that is for planning and conducting a training conference on immigrant and refugee mental health issues. With a special emphasis, on Somali immigrant or in the Somali immigrant community. Once again, Mr. Chair, just anecdotally, there has been a lot of instances of undiagnosed mental health in the immigrant, but in particular the Somali community, and this is the ability for us to start to get a hold of that and create awareness and outreach to that community.
So, Senator Hayden... And you're reducing another appropriation, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, on line 1.2, the amendment reduces the appropriation to the Department of Human Services, the operations appropriation. And on line 1.3, it increases the appropriations to the Department of Health.
But where is this? On 1.3? On line 28.
So, Senator Hayden, you're going to move that central office. That, again, that was the piece that we set up this morning and said that we'd been pretty thin with giving DHS the FTEs that they were looking for to accomplish the things in the governor's budget, and instead we had this idea to set up a central office operations account to give them some flexibility. You're reducing that central operations account and moving that money over to the Department of Health.
You know, Mr. Chair, let's do a little more thinking on that, and so I'll withdraw the amendment, but I thought it was important for us to have the conversation.
Senator Hayden withdraws the A22 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A26 amendment. This is the emergency medical assistance grants that was in the bill. There was some work that needed to be done with the Safety Net Coalition and other hospitals that wanted to be sure that they had an opportunity to, if they found someone that they got uncompensated care or that didn't have that uncompensated care, that they would be able to access these grants. And so I know Mr. Godfrey is here to maybe talk about how they worked this out. It looks like all the parties involved, including the Safety Net Coalition, are comfortable with this language.
Mr. Godfrey, would you care to offer some additional insights? I saw this come through about 10 minutes before heading down to the committee in typical fashion.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, what Senator Hayden described is correct. This is a effort on the part of the Safety Net hospitals to work out an arrangement with other hospitals who would like to broaden access to these funds related to uncompensated care cases related to the Emergency Medical Assistance Program. I will say that I've been talking with the Department of Health about the administration of this program, and I think we need just a little bit more time before action could be taken on this so we can make sure that their concerns are taken care of.
So this method of implementing, overseeing the grants might be a little bit more administratively burdensome than the last approach. Is that okay?
Yes, Mr. Chair. What this amendment does is create a grants program based on outlier claims of above $150,000 of emergency medical assistance reimbursement. We don't think there's very many of those claims out there potentially that could be that would be eligible to receive these grants, but we just need to talk it through with the department.
Yeah, but we've seen some instances where it's happened and facilities have gotten stuck with these outlier claims. So maybe we should set this one aside for a little while.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to, I guess, to withdraw the A26 and see if we can do a little more work to make sure it's clear.
Thank you.
The Department of Health. And, Mr. Chair, finally, I have the A, or maybe not finally, let me see, maybe one more. I have the A3 amendment, which is language that has been agreed to by DHS and I think the Disability Law Center and it clarifies that a participant can request additional assessments for cause, a change in condition, or change in need of services or support. Looks like this was on in the House, and it looks like I got this from Hennepin County, and they said that it had been worked out.
And this would be the Department of Human Services overseeing this one. Can we get a confirmation that there would be no cost associated with this? Or welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stacey Meyer-Twight with the Department of Human Services. You are correct. There are no costs associated with this amendment.
Okay. Any further questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Hayden moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Senator Hayden. And finally, Mr. Chair, I have the A11 amendment. As many members would know, this was the work that we were doing on the 25% home and community-based service housing bill that I had. We know that there was in the bill that, as it read, that looked like there was there was a large cost in the tails, and that was due to some uncertainty on how we move forward with this. So we are continuing to do a lot of work on this to see if we can refine it, but this is essentially a placeholder for that and allows the commissioner some language we worked with you, Mr. Chair, and others to provide a report to start working through this process. I mean, it takes a little while to articulate, but we think this is a good placeholder language while we move forward, as this world is a little fluid and flux, and there's still more work being done today.
And I talked with the department beforehand. We had this language. They confirmed that there was no cost to this formulation. Any further discussion on the A11 amendment?
Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Rosen.
The A11 amendment looks very similar to the critical access dental amendment. It should have
Is there a critical access dental amendment in front of us?
It's coming. Just point that out to the members.
This is, you know, it may well be. I will look forward to the critical access dental, but this really was explained to me as work that the department is really doing. You know, I think we had a long discussion about the fact that we have new guidance on home and community-based services and how they are to be operated from CMS that came just in January of this year. And DHS is working very hard to understand them, and this is saying help us stay in the loop as you gain a better understanding of what needs to happen with our home and community-based services, and engage all of the stakeholders, too, in your process as you think through it and come up with the best plan. Because I think that, again, the 25% group, the choice in housing folks, really did a good job of convincing most of us here that that's a very good policy direction to be moving in. So as we move forward, DHS will work on those new HCBS guidance and keep us informed. Any further questions on the A11 amendment? Seeing none, on Senator Hayden's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Right. Any other amendments? Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, I have the A5 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves the A5 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this deals with the medical assistance spend-down requirements. And we're basically asking the department to review the requirements and processes, including what's going on in other states for those with disabilities and seniors of 65 and older. And right now what's happening is that we ask the provider to give services to somebody that has a spend down. They provide the service. They bill DHS for providing the service. Then DHS reimburses the provider for part of the cost of providing the service, and then instructs the provider to collect the rest of the payment for the service. And sometimes not only is it hard to get the rest of the payment, it's also hard for people to have a spend down if they're on low income. So it's basically asking the department to review these, what's going on in the spend down area. And I do think we hear a lot about this.
We heard about it from Rebecca Covington with the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities. It is something that obviously needs some work. I'm curious about the date that your report is due in November of 15, after the next budget-setting session, before another supplemental session. Is there was that something you worked on with DHS? Or
Mr. Chair, no, I did not. This was given to me from the stakeholder groups, but there is no fiscal cost to this. The department did say there was no fiscal cost, but
can I get the department to confirm that there's no cost with this A5 amendment? Mr. Haltman, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patrick Haltman with the Department of Human Services. This is the first time we've seen this. I know there's been a great deal of interest in this topic, so we'll review this and get back to you on whether there be a cost to this particular study.
Senator Rosen, did you think you had a different agreement?
Yes. If we could have the Minnesota Home Care Association or somebody who's representing that, because from what I understand, this was vetted through with the department, and they said there would be no fiscal cost to it.
Is there someone who worked on this? Welcome to the committee. State
Thank
your
you,
name.
Senator Lurie, members of the committee. My name is Ani Simons. I represent the Minnesota Home Care Association. We had vetted this amendment by one individual who worked at DHS who is now conversing with the other individual who... And I'm certainly not trying to put DHS on the spot at all. And if it comes that there is a fiscal note, we are happy to work with Senator Rosen to withdraw it. We were under the impression there would not be a fiscal note on this.
Well,
Mr. Chair, I will withdraw the A5 amendment until we get an answer for right
for now.
Now.
Yeah,
for now. Yes.
That'll work. We got one of Hayden set aside too, working on costs. I see him off in the corner.
Thank you.
Yeah. That means a good one's coming, I think. Next amendment.
I'd like a whale. Okay.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A20 amendment.
Senator Franzen moves the A20 amendment.
Can you talk
about it? Sorry. What is this? Okay. Senator Franzen, you care to describe your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This one is concerning the Center for Victims of Torture, and this will change the way the claims are paid through the state, and then the state would bill the counties for the non-federal share of the costs associated with mental health targeted case management services. And we just got confirmation that there is no fiscal impact.
You will. Since I have the fiscal note in front of me, since the amendment reinforces existing policy, there is no fiscal impact on the Minnesota health care programs, and the fiscal note is zero. So that is pretty good evidence. Any other questions on the A20 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Any further amendments? Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A9 amendment.
Which one are you looking at, Senator?
Which one? Wrong amendment.
Officers, how do you do yours?
Which one? What amendment are we offering?
It's numbered the same as our policy. So I know that. I've never in my like 100 years.
Well, there's these HHS. Zero. I saw in other committees. That's why I was saying they were referencing the whole.
One's a letter, one's a number.
One's a letter, one's a number.
Where's the other one?
These are all letters. This is a number. This is zero.
You're looking at the same
thing. Coming now, huh? You'd be coming now.
Did you go to collect days out there? Did you go to collect days?
It's a
20. Has their deal.
Oh, I can't. I have two.
Okay. Senator Franzen.
Mr. Chair, the A9 is also no fiscal impact. It just allows the commissioner to decide to use federal authority for Medicaid state plan amendment under the early periodic diagnosis, screening, and treatment, or other Medicaid provision for any aspect or type of treatment offered. If the new guidance, federal guidance, is helpful in achieving more and more of the purposes of the section, so it's related to autism, and only if it's helpful would it be treatments that would be
used and covered.
I know Ms. Henry worked on this one as well, and can we get confirmation from the department that this is fiscally neutral in its impact? I see the nods that we need. Any other questions of members on the A9 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Franzen, did you have more?
One final amendment.
But it's the A9 as well.
Another A9. So we will call this the HHSOMNI-A9 amendment. The other one, if you look at the top right of the amendments, is the full reviser number. And because this isn't to a bill, it's to a reviser's document, that whole number can become significant. I guess we found out how. So on the HHSOMNI-A9, Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, we've had the discussion about allowing or having the CCAP dollars be tied to quality through Parent Aware. So this amendment strives to do that with some exemptions and some waivers to programs that might not be available in communities. So it's sort of comprehensive, but it starts beginning requiring that beginning 2018. And again, there's some waiver if there is no program available with at least one star quality rating at that time. And it also allows the commissioner to develop that process of a waiver. And finally, it has a Parent Aware Quality Rating and Improvement System Accessibility Report requirement reporting to the legislature in 2015.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we heard this in policy, and I can't remember if the hang-up was that it had a fiscal provision or that there wasn't adequate training available to get enough providers to meet these requirements. And I'm wondering if Senator Franzen has heard that, addressed it, walk me through how we don't have that problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, for your question. Their concerns of whether this would, if there is adequate availability of the program and training, that's why it's starting to be effective in 2018 versus sooner. But it's also putting a placeholder that by then we should be able to have access to Parent Aware services across the state. And even if we didn't, it also has some guardrails to have a waiver for providers who do not have who live in an area who don't have the system available. Or if you see in line 2.1 and 2.3, there's certain waivers. If you have a child and doesn't attend a quality rated program, you can keep your second child from going to the same program if that's what the family chooses to do. So there are some more 20? Options. It's not as prescriptive, if you will.
Is this one already
passed?
So the assumption is by 2018 we will have the training. We will be ready to have the service available statewide.
Mr. Benson, a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I don't remember what the date was in the original language, but we had significant testimony that that was not feasible. And so I don't know if there's someone here who can help clarify, but if it's not feasible, I don't like putting things that aren't feasible into statute because we end up coming back to have to fix them. Right now, I don't think this is it's a good idea. But if we don't have infrastructure in place, I don't know that it makes sense to move forward with it.
Senator Brown, you had some.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Franzen, could you explain to me what defines someone as a participating provider and how many providers who currently are not participating providers would be excluded once this goes into effect.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, I don't think I can answer that question with detail. It's, as you know, the system was just rolled out in 2013, so we're still in implementation phase, so this is a placeholder. So if we're going to do the quality rating and quality on the education side, we want to have the same education rating and quality rating on the CCAP side. So this is trying to align both systems and by 2018 to start moving in that direction on the CCAP side. So the assumption, again, is that rural communities and the entire state will have access to quality-rated programs by 2018, but I'm not sure how many. I can't speak to that. Maybe someone, maybe Shep Harris, who can come up and testify to that extent.
Mr. Harris?
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Shep Harris. I'm here on behalf of Parent Aware for School Readiness, also known as PASSER. We've been working with a number of stakeholders on this, including the Department of Human Services. I'm not sure if they're here in the room who can answer your question, Senator Brown, directly. The point of this, we're trying to strike a balance between the fact that there are a number of financial incentives right now through Race to the Top dollars, as well as private sector dollars. They're incentivizing providers to come to the table and get training, adequate training, to be parent aware, star quality rated. However, what we're seeing is that it is a low number of providers that are coming to the table. I would defer to DHS to verify that. The number off the top of my head is some, and I could be wrong on this, but I think it's somewhere around in the teens, 13%, but I'd want DHS to verify that for me. So the point of this bill is to try to, as we have the incentives over here, we feel like we need to put in a date to try to encourage. It's another type of incentive in a sense. At least we're not like Wisconsin, where they're penalizing CCAP recipients if they don't participate in the program. We're at least, what we're trying to do is put a deadline in there, a timeline for people to participate. So we also realize there are some challenges, especially out in greater Minnesota and also in some areas of the metro area, and that's why we have a number of waivers in here. So it's that careful balance of trying to get 30%, if not more, provider participation.
Well, and, you know, I do need to say we did put significant carrots in incentives in last year in terms of a 15% increase in your CCAP rates for achieving a 3-star and a 20% bump for achieving a 4-star. And those are significant incentives to bring providers forward, I believe. And this actually is a little bit structured in the way I read it as a requirement. You know, granted, there's the safety rails, but it is a requirement unless you go through the rigmarole to hit those safety rails and get excluded. And then an additional very grave concern to the one who is in charge of watching the spreadsheet is that an effective date in January 18, if you pull out your spreadsheets, members, you'll notice that they end in 2017. And the precedent of building costs out into the tails beyond that what we can evaluate is one that I have very significant concerns with allowing. I mean, we could do no end to mischief if we started allowing effective dates out beyond the fiscal implications that we can see on the spreadsheets for the bienniums that we track.
So, Mr. Chair, and on that note, I do respect that, and I certainly don't want to put the spreadsheet at odds with what we're trying to accomplish. And I wanted to have this discussion. I think we need to continue to have it and hopefully move in that direction. And because CCAP is certainly, I would say, very much in line with what we're trying to do on the education budget side, and that's where we're funding it right now in terms of adding quality ratings to the dollars that we are providing in terms of scholarships. So my intent is to bring this again next year, and when 2018 will be in the relevant to our budget discussions, and certainly wanted to bring it to the attention of members that this is certainly something that we should vet thoroughly and hopefully have the a more thorough discussion then. With that in mind, I want to respect the chair's determination there and wanted to keep at least the reporting side, which I'm told could be also no fiscal cost, and if that's available, I would move to just move forward the section where we would have the parent aware quality rating and improvement system accessibility report, starting on 2.30.
So that would be to... Could council help with what the amendment, what the oral amendment incorporated into the A9 would be?
Mr. Chair and members, it would be delete the language on 1.2 through 2.29. And then also delete the language on 3.17 to 3.19, which refers back to those previous three sections. So then what's left is the report that's due February 15, 2015.
Is there, and Senator Friends, and it's your belief that that report would have no cost?
Maybe Mr. Chair, I'd love to get confirmation, but I have talked to the Office of Early Learning, and they are collecting this information already, so I don't suspect this would be...
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'm looking at the fiscal note right here where it actually specifically says that it's within the current scope of the work of the Department of Human Services. No additional funding is needed.
Well, I'm still going to have them.
Yeah.
Just not. DHS is nodding. There would be no fiscal note to the amendment. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would think when Parent Aware was put in, there were already some reports requested. Is this going to be an additional? Is there just a slight difference that we're asking for here? Because I've never seen a piece of legislation pass without related reports. And so I guess before we add another slightly different report, if somebody can tell me if there's already going to be from the Department of Education or the Department of Early Learning, if there's some other report that we could piggyback on to.
Is there someone from the department who can help us understand how this report would fit into the other, any other reports being done on Parent Aware?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't answer the question regarding about previous reports, but the purpose of this and the reason why the fiscal cost is zero, again, I'll defer for confirmation from the department on this, but my understanding is that this is basically a modeling. This is a report to put together a model of how can we achieve this by 2018. How can we implement this program throughout the state with the assistance of all the counties and of the various state agencies to make sure it's done effectively? So in a sense, it's what we're doing is we're formalizing something that's being done, but it's including a couple of the other state agencies. So it's the purpose of this isn't so much of a report compared to what's if something's been done in the past. This is really to look at the modeling of how it will be implemented going forward.
And for the recording that's being done, that was Shep Harris.
My apologies, Mr. Chair.
Not with the department. But Senator Benson, did you have a follow-up? Senator Hayden? Seeing none, any further questions on the A9 as amended? Seeing none. On Senator Franzen's motion to move the A9 as amended, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same no. Sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further amendments? Senator Sharon.
I have the A19 amendment. This is on page 190. It's under Article 7, the Health Department. When we changed language for designated rural area to make it possible for participants to fill in a service commitment in order to get some assistance with their education. We indicated on line 190.16 a designated rural area would mean a city. This amendment simply adds for a township.
And what? Okay.
Because the possibility for a person to serve in the rural part of the state may be in an area that is not incorporated as a city, but maybe a township.
With so over 15,000, huh? It's a big township.
Under 15. It's under 15,000.
Under 15,000. There we go. That's better. That's the townships I know and love. Okay.
They run the roost. You rule the roost.
And what does this do for? What does it function as? Is there money tied to this, and does it change how the money is distributed?
It's a qualified education loan. Yeah, perhaps you could. It's a qualified education loan. It just makes certain that if a city might be too narrow for a rural area, because there may be appropriate places that are not in incorporated areas that are in townships. So it allows for the utilization of these resources.
Mr. Schoenbaum?
Mr. Chairman, Mark Schoenbaum from the Health Department. I think you said it well, Senator Sharon. There's no cost to this amendment. Earlier in your meetings, you added some corrections and clarification to the existing definition of a rural area that was in statute for the state's loan forgiveness program. You did some good work by changing, replacing the term area with the term city. However, in order to make sure, particularly in those areas where there's growth outside the city boundary, that wherever a clinic may be, if it's in a small community, it's eligible, adding the word township, city or township, covers the entirety of the small rural areas in Minnesota.
Excellent. Good catch. Any questions of members on Senator Sharon's A-19 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. First amendments. And if members could speak directly into the microphones, evidently the overflow is having a hard time hearing everything that's said. So, Senator Eakin.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A-14 amendment.
Senator Eakin moves the A-14 amendment.
And Mr. Chair and members, this amendment deals with the CFSS language, and it brings it to match with the language that's contained in the PCA statute. The PCA statute currently has language regarding the 14-day supervisory visit requirement for last-minute fill-ins when somebody doesn't show up, for instance, for their shift. And oftentimes it's last-minute shifts that need to be filled here, and that person just fills in just for that evening or for that day. So the 14-day visit really doesn't apply because these people aren't going to be coming back again. And the 14-day requirement, if it does not, if we do not pass this amendment, it would make it impossible to send a fill-in person to fill in because they'd need to have somebody that would be able to do the supervisory visit immediately, and there wouldn't be somebody available to do that. So that's the reason that it was put into the PCA language, and we're simply trying to make the PCA language now match up with the have the CFSS language match up with that PCA language.
This is the first any of us up here have seen this. Who have you worked on with this? Has the department been engaged?
Well, they're looking at it right now. The Department of Human Services does not object to this. They're okay with the language as far as what I've been told.
They're looking at it right now. They need maybe a little bit of time.
And Mr. Chair, I was working with Ani Simons on this, so if she's...
Another one.
Chair Lowry, members of the committee, hopefully this one goes a little better. We did work with the Department of Human Services, the folks working on the CFSS program. We brought this issue to their attention. They replied, if you offer this language that you see in front of you, we will not object. It clarifies the issue that Senator Lowry described, and Stacy can speak for the department.
Welcome to the committee.
Stacy Meyer-Tart with the Department of Human Services. Ani Simons is correct. We did offer some technical assistance to the association on this language and don't have a problem with it.
And there's no fiscal
impact
associated with it. Okay. Help. Any further questions of the A-14 amendment? Seeing none, on Senator Eakin's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Any further amendments? Senator Rosen.
I would like to bring back the A5 amendment.
Okay.
And that was the one where there was... And I would like to... there was discussion with the department, and there is no fiscal note attached to it, as we thought. But I believe that there is a change on the oral amendment on the date that it needs to be reported back to the legislature. And instead of on 1.116, instead of November, would it be February. So I'd like to move that oral amendment, please. February of 15 of 2015.
Okay. Senator Rosen incorporates that into her A5 amendment and moves the A5 amendment. DHS, you have confirmed that this would have no fiscal implications to complete this report? Mr. Holtman?
February 15th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Excellent.
We're good.
Any further questions on the A5 amendment? Seeing none on Senator Rosen's motion that the A5 amendment is orally amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Is this the last of the amendments, or Senator Hayden, do you have some more that you're bringing back?
Senator Rosen, you got your A26 in shape?
Well, I was looking around, but I haven't seen anybody flag me, Mr. Chair.
Not ready.
It's not quite
okay.
Yep. Ready
no,
yet.
I'm gonna,
you got
this is still
Senator Eakin.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to move the A10 amendment. And this amendment, deals with the closure of adult foster care beds. Back in 2012, the legislature called for a process for providers to voluntarily close 128 beds, up to 128 beds, with a stipulation that the department would close beds after July 1st, 2014, if that bed closure goal was not met. Today, there are 35 beds that remain to be closed out of that. And this amendment requires that the DHS consults with the counties and with providers to identify beds that have been open for 12 or more months if that 128 target isn't met by July 1st. The amendment provides protections to ensure stability here for the providers. So that we don't see the department closing a bed that becomes open due to routine reasons, which could create some real problems for the provider. We want them to be in consultation here, again, with the providers, with the counties, to ensure that if they're going to be closing these beds, they're beds that, first of all, they look at the beds that have been open for a long period of time so that these providers have already budgeted for it. It's not going to create any kind of difficulties for the providers. So that's simply all it asks for. The DHS is okay with this amendment. It's also in the House bill.
Has DHS had the opportunity? I haven't seen this one before. Ms. Myers is saying this is okay. It has no fiscal implications. Any other questions of members on the A10 amendment? Seeing none, on Senator Eakin's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Eakin.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Senator Eakin moves the A6 amendment.
And Mr. Chair and members, this amendment recognizes the rights of collective bargaining in the process. It applies to the 5% language that we've passed in regard to home and community-based services, it ensures that those organizations that have unions that those collective bargaining units do have a say in the distribution plan for those wages, for those wage increases. Unions that represent the employees have worked closely with the steering committee of the 5% campaign in drafting this amendment. All the interested parties have been supporting this amendment, and the language here is similar to previous language that have been used for other rate increases for long-term care providers, including the rate increase that we passed last year for nursing homes. So it's very standard language that's been used in the past. The unions and the 5% campaign both are in support of this amendment.
I know these ones. Any other questions of members? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Eakin, through the years, not recently, of course, but obviously through the years, there has been some increases. Is this language standard language for what we've been dealing with collective bargaining in this arena?
Senator Eakin.
For long-term care facilities?
Mr. Yes. Chair and Senator Rosen, yes, it is. It was used in the language last year for the 5% increase for the nursing homes.
It's also in our low-wage nursing home adjustment, this same language. This has become the standard language for those industries that have some organized and some non-organized workers.
Okay.
Any further questions on the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Any further amendments?
Where is Senator Clausen?
I don't know, but I know he had, you told me he had three.
Seeing none, I know.
Senator Sharon. I have the A21 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A21 amendment.
And if Paige would distribute this, I have an oral amendment to my A21 amendment. This is the language of the oral amendment. The A21 amendment is an amendment that relates to the non-emergency medical transportation bill that was presented in this committee. The fiscal note for this plan that was presented by the task force was substantial. And so what you have in front of you is an elimination of all of the elements of the plan that have fiscal implications. What are those? In the original bill, there was language that would have increased rates for volunteer drivers. There would have been a restoration of the cut that we made to non-emergency medical transportation providers, the only group that has not been made whole since we've cut back on persons' rates, so we will be coming back next year to try to resolve those issues. And also, the subcommittee of the task force that worked on rates for the various modes that are newly defined in this bill were eliminated. So all of the elements that would have created increased costs have been removed from the bill. In addition, but what remains then is the description, the policy language, and the changes that are fundamental to the overall hard work and agreement that was done by this task force. The other change in here is a delay of the implementation of the modes. Now, to simply describe that, in the past, the system was divided between ATS and STS services. The auditor indicated the importance of going to a single administrative structure. So the modes that are in this bill are the outcome of that work of the task force to develop a single administrative structure. We then built in rates associated with those modes that have been removed from this bill. And we also delay the implementation of those modes for 1 year. So that's the basic A21 bill. And then in order to assure its budget neutrality,
The department has asked us to add the language that is in this typed form. So that will be an oral amendment on line 3.10, page 3, after the period. You would add the language, the rates must be budget neutral, ensuring that the total aggregate payments are equal to the total aggregate payments for the same number and type of services in the base year 2013. So we stay with the forecasted amount that would have impacted the non-emergency medical transportation program. No increases. So I would like to offer the oral amendment. I'd like to, yep. I don't know how you want me to do this. So
where would it be in the bill?
On page 3, line 3.10 after the period. It says F, period, and then indicate the rates must be budget neutral.
Okay. Have the oral actually written. Senator Sharon, you know, I think the whole package was well received, and the committee really did respect the work of this large task force that went through a lot of, you know, prickly issues that have plagued us here at the legislature for a long time. So, you know, me for myself, for one, I appreciate your ability and willingness to take the costs out and try to carry this forward, and, you know, hope we can do this. Can I get somebody from DHS to confirm that this has successfully removed the fiscal implications from the bill, the proposal? Mr. Holtman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We think this has successfully removed our costs. I just a bug in my ear about the DOT cost that there's. We're trying to locate that right now. The EBO is, but that's another department.
Okay. Senator Sharon,
that's the DHS cost. The Department of Transportation's costs are covered by fees. Fees for the inspections remain in this bill, and the fees associated with that remain in this bill. So nothing changes about that, and that was not a part of the fiscal note of which there was concern. So that we aren't changing any of that. That is not. That's a.
Did the
that's
department
a, that's
of,
paid for?
Did the transportation committee?
Yes.
Hear the bill and
yes.
Sign off on
yes.
It and agree to track in their spreadsheet the portion, and this did not change their section.
Yes,
is what
Abderholden come forward and answer that question.
Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Sue Abderholden, NAMI Minnesota, and co-chair of the task force. Because we added the waiver into it so they actually don't have to meet the requirements immediately, we give them a year. Because part of the problem is the Department of Transportation had no idea how many new vehicles would come forward. So rather than having a wild fiscal note, we said we'll give them a waiver for a year. People will apply and say, you know, next year I'll have to come in and do this. We'll have a number, and then the Department of Transportation will come back next year with the amount of fees that they would need to cover the costs of certifying these vehicles.
And that was an agreement that was worked out with the Department of Transportation.
Is there someone from – I see folks from MMB kind of watching carefully. Is there – are we close to having word that that's – been tracked and properly in other jurisdictions? I'd hate to. It's okay, we got a thumbs up.
Yes.
Mr. Bernardi, maybe you could even speak into the.
Mr. Chair, Pete Bernardi, Minnesota Management and Budget. I may be confusing the fiscal notes for there's a related House bill, and I may be confusing them. I think that it is correct that there are no costs, but maybe just take a couple minutes to confirm that.
Would you like me to put this on the table while they do that?
Well, I think we do have a couple more amendments. It'd probably be wise to, rather than try to back it out if something doesn't work, but again, I like what you've done here, and think we should be able to adopt that in a minute here. Are there any other amendments? I think we're close on Senator Hayden's 26. You know what? We have Clausen's here? Okay. Senator Clausen, you have the A what amendment?
A4, 813, and 827.
Senator Clausen moves the...
Let's move the A13 amendment.
The A13 amendment.
And I apologize, Mr. Chair, there for being called away.
Senator Clausen, this looks pretty straightforward.
Yes.
Change the terms health and safety to health and welfare.
Yes, it is a simple change in language. The A13th Amendment is needed to comply with the federal Medicaid home and community-based waiver services requirement to assure participants' health and welfare rather than health and safety. The change from safety to welfare is important to be consistent with the requirements of the Minnesota Home and Community-Based Waiver Services, and there's no fiscal cost to this amendment.
Any questions on the A13 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A4 amendment.
Senator Clausen moves the A4 amendment.
And on this amendment, Mr. Chair, I would like some further clarification from some testifiers.
Okay.
Thank you.
What is the,
yep, Mr. Chair, the A4 amendment extends the consumer-directed community supports budget amendment, which was passed in 2012, to the year 2017 for 21-year-olds. And I'll ask Lutheran Social Services if they're here, or Heidi Hamilton from DHS.
Mr. Chair, even
Mr. Larson?
Steve Larson from the ARC. This extends legislation as... Senator Clausen said that came up 2 years ago. And this allows the individuals on consumer-directed community supports to continue on that program once they turn become adults, and it provides some additional funding for their day services or employment programs. It's been very successful, and this is just seeking to continue that. The Department of Human Services has determined that there's no fiscal note with this, and they can verify that.
Ms. Bartolik, can you confirm that there's no fiscal implications associated with this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Alex Bartolik, DHS, that's true. There is no fiscal note.
Any further questions of members? Seeing none, on Senator Clausen's motion on the A4 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
And Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Clausen.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the A27 amendment, please.
Senator Clausen moves the A27 amendment.
And Mr. Chair and committee, there's two parts to the 827 amendment. Part one provides technical assistance to providers to comply with the rules and laws pertaining to home care and community-based services. Part two of the amendment seeks to convey a study to determine how to align a single client bill of rights between the home care and community-based services currently, current bill of rights. So there are two groups that have individual client bill of rights documents, and this would put those two, a study that would put those two together, and so we'd have one bill potentially. And I think Susan Winkleman from MDH is here and could comment as well.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Susan Winkleman. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health.
And?
The 827 amendment has two additions, and they both relate to the integrated licensing proposal, which is a part of the bill. And the two additions are that it clarifies that the Commissioner of Health will provide technical assistance, just like DHS licensing will do for its new 245D home and community-based services license. And also it adds a study about the client bill of rights. There are three client bill of rights affected. There's one for the home care providers, there's one for home and community-based services, and there's also one addendum that goes to assisted living settings. So this study would be an attempt to blend or whatever kind of compromise we can come up with so that consumers get their rights and are notified, but it's not so cumbersome and onerous.
And there would be no fiscal implications associated with?
Mr. Chair, members, we did cost it out at $4,063 for 128 hours of staff time.
Mr. Greenman?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We did cost it out. The committee can fund it as they wish.
We don't have Mr. Albrecht here right now, but I'll write $4,000 at the bottom of this, and we'll see if it winds up in the spreadsheet or not.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Any further questions of members on the A27 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Claussen renews his motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
I think staff is back on A21 amendment.
The back to your amendment, the 821?
Yes.
Excellent.
I see that the...
I see Mr. Bernardi coming back up to the mic. Do we have clarity that...
Mr. Chair, yes. Sorry for the delay there. Fiscal note that had been done, the Department of Transportation did have $17,000 in costs in fiscal year 2015. And then in the out years, there would be costs as well, but those would be covered by fee revenues that they would generate.
Ms. Abner-Holden?
Mr. Chairman, members, so the money is to pay for putting this report together. The report is literally how many people applied for a waiver, what would the staffing costs be to certify these vehicles in the future, and what that rate should be. I could do it for less, but
contract it out. I'll do it too for nothing.
You know, we have to find some way to get this in the bill, and we will. But there, the DOT has put a $17,000 cost on this report, huh? Is it possible to take this report out if somebody else is able to provide it for us, Senator Sharon? Or we could wait for a minute and try to find out from Senator Dibble if he can tell, if he's okay with us putting it in here and he either tracks the cost or doesn't. I just hate
when
to...
This will go to the Finance Committee where Senator Dibble will be?
Yes, it will. We can deal with it there.
Yes. And we can have a conversation with the department because I think Ms. Abner-Holden was really clear. This is simply a process of having people send in the request to be waived from the obligation for a year so that we can figure out how many vehicles will be inspected, and then the department simply
cost says that the cost associated with this is divided among the fees for inspecting the vehicle. So $17,000 seems extraordinarily excessive for a report of that nature.
And so, Senator Sharon, you'll approach Senator Dibble and say that Senator Lorie tried very hard to make sure that his division was respected.
I'll tell him you did well by
and
him.
That,
yes.
And that we will have this conversation then in full finance. If there's an issue, we can work on it. I'm on full finance with Senator Dibble, and I will talk to him about it as well and try to get this ironed out before we complete this. But with that, I'm comfortable with the 821 amendment and the fact that there's no costs for the Department of Human Services, and we'll work on this transportation report. Any further discussion on the 821 amendment as amended by Senator Sharon? Seeing none, on Senator Sharon's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Any further amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, I have the A8 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves the A8 amendment.
Saving the best for the last, Mr. Chair. This is our favorite subject, critical access dental. It's a work in progress.
Senator Rosen, on the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you can see, it deals with a critical access dental program, which I've been working on all session, and it just kept getting, like I made the analogy, you start with fixing the sink, and all of a sudden you've got this total house rehab. And that's kind of what we're doing here. My hope is to get some significant movement over the interim on this program, with the help of all the stakeholders. So the amendment has an expiration of the critical access dental of July 1st, 2015. And I must say that the department did a really great job with their study that just came out earlier, the earlier part of this session. So we're taking springboarding off of that blueprint of the study. The rest of the language has caused some issues as far as, you know, not redoing the study, but making sure that we have significant movement going forward with the stakeholders. So there are going to be some oral amendments, Mr. Chair, to get this up to what may be acceptable. And it might need to be adjusted again in finance a little bit because this is a moving target. But from what the department said, if the language stayed as it did, there would be a fiscal no. But they said, and I need confirmation from that, if we take out on line, page 3, line 15, take out after when it starts in developing this new system, the work group must consider, take out one, the paragraph, or the line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then after 5, the prevention of overuse, fraud, and abuse. So that whole section right there would come out, and we'll have to have the department come up and verify that this would at least give them a start to not have a fiscal note on it.
So in developing this new system, the work group must consider the prevention of overuse, fraud, and abuse is what's left? Is that correct? No.
No, the prevention of overuse, fraud, and abuse, Mr. Chair, would also be taken out.
And in developing this new system, the work group must consider also comes out? Okay, so
I didn't explain that.
On line 3.15, delete everything after the period and delete 3.16 through 3.25.
But I must say that, Ms. Kavanaugh, put a really, I do like this wording, and I hope everybody has a chance to read this, because I do think this is the direction that we should be going in. And we just don't want to redo what was already done in this study. But I do feel that this is the area that we need to take a look at. Then also on 3.26, after shall, delete appoint members to the work group who represent, and put instead consult with. And then one more oral amendment, Mr. Chair, members. Back up on line 12, 3.12, after human services, put in consultation with the Commissioner of Health, then shall convene a work group to develop. So a few adjustments there.
So Commissioner of Human Services and consultants in consultation with MDH, and then getting rid of the scoping of what the work group must consider, mm-hmm. and then the commissioner shall consult with these stakeholders.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sure some stakeholders would like to comment on this, but the other issue that perhaps maybe need to be adjusted in finance is how we get in another health plan company such as Delta Dental into the language that probably needs to be in there. It's not really explicit, and so we're need to
in the list of folks to be consulted, in the list of stakeholders,
correct.
You're saying?
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, you know, the first couple of sections where you here to sunset critical access dental,
yes.
too, might.
And that's where I'd like to have some discussion, if you wouldn't mind. Mr.
Okay.
Chair?
No, I don't.
We are.
Mind.
If this, I saved the best for the last, like I said.
Okay. is there anyone who'd like to offer some thoughts on the A8 amendment as amended? Mr. Scandrett, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we really appreciate Senator Rosen's interest in the issue. We are committed to working. We know there are a lot of things that need to be improved. We've got a serious dental access problem, and our current strategies are not working effectively everywhere they need to. So the Safety Net Coalition is definitely committed to working over the interim with the department on this. I do have to express some strong concern with the first two sections of the amendment. For those of you that serve on policy committee, you will remember that this was offered in policy and defeated. So it's offering again a proposal that the policy committee disagreed with, and that is to sunset the critical access dental program without actually having something to put into law to replace it with. And there are a lot of safety net providers who serve primarily low income and disadvantaged populations who depend on those current payments from the critical access dental program. If that program goes away, you will see safety net providers going away. And we think it's kind of a scary thing to repeal the program before we have a study done and anything to replace it with. I don't think you need that strong of a gun to our head to get us to agree to show up and work on this over the interim. We would just be concerned that the lack of action next session, whether that's due to controversy or whatever other reasons, could result in not having any agreement on what to do differently, but to see only this year's law go into effect, eliminating the program. So we'd encourage the committee to do what the policy committee did and remove those first two sections of the bill that sunset the critical access dental program.
Senator Rosen, any response or more testimony?
Please.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Koski. I'm a manager at Children's Dental Services, which has been a major Minnesota safety net provider since 1919. In 2013, Children's Dental Services provided care to over 32,000 of Minnesota's poorest children and pregnant women, with over 99% of those patients having incomes below the federal poverty guideline. Unlike most of the private dental offices in Minnesota, CDS serves almost entirely medical assistance or uninsured patients. Fewer than 100% of our patients receive private insurance with enhanced reimbursement. We receive $550,000 in critical access annually. At CDS, we utilize all critical access funding to expand care to greater Minnesota, serving International Falls, Canadian Border, Virginia, Hibbing, Mount Iron, Eveleth, Ely, Chisholm, Keewatin, Cloquet, St. Cloud, Faribault, Moorhead, Dilworth, London, Felton, Pipestone, and several other areas. If critical access funding is eliminated, we will have to eliminate our care in Greater Minnesota because we simply do not have the funds to support the care there. If this funding has been the single most effective source of maintaining and expanding services across the state, and I strongly urge you not to eliminate this program for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back to the committee. State your name once again for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jeannie Johnson with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. And while the community health centers, the federally qualified health centers in Minnesota, see a smaller portion of this program, we would like to reiterate what the Safety Net Coalition has said, in that without our critical access dental allies, the Safety Net community and the community health centers will be overwhelmed with dental care need. Currently, some of our clinics are facing over 1 month waiting periods for folks to get in for dental services, and so we really do rely on our partners to be able to get these folks the dental access that they need.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Godfrey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is David Godfrey. I'm representing Hennepin County Medical Center. Hennepin County Medical Center has the largest hospital-based dental provider group in the state. We primarily provide dental services for two distinct populations. One is for developmentally delayed and disabled children, physically disabled children, and we provide the bulk, vast majority of that population are Medicaid enrollees. And so to have the critical access dental payment actually eliminated in calendar year 15 will be a great disruption to that program. We also provide emergency department dental services, and we have an urgent care dental clinic, which we provide to many of the people that present to our emergency department with dental pain. And we've been able to maintain that service because we do have this critical access dental payment. And I would say our primary concern is the timing of this sunset, which would happen right in the middle of calendar year 15, which is we are on a calendar year budget schedule. And so going into 2015, this would create a great deal of consternation for our finance staff and for our chief financial officer, because dental, even with the critical access payment, is something that we lose money on. So not knowing what will replace it as we go into 2015 will almost certainly create pressure to cut back on those services. With that, I conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Godfrey. Any other individuals wish to testify? Mr. Spizzetto, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dominic Spizzetto. I represent the Minnesota Dental Association, and we're very happy that Senator Rosen has elevated this issue. It's something we've been talking about with the committee for several years. We've taken Band-Aid approaches over the last several years to try and fix issues that have popped up in various parts of the state. We think it's time to look at the whole program in its entirety and make sure that it's meeting its needs. You heard from a lot of people that tell you that critical access funding is basically fundamental to their efforts to provide care to these people. It's the same for private practitioners. Without this funding, private practice throughout the state, especially in Greater Minnesota, we've seen clinics close. We're seeing private practices eliminated and quitting the program, and we think it's at a critical stage, to borrow a pun. And we would really like to work with the department and all the various stakeholders to come back with a fix next year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Spizzetto. Is there others who wish to offer testimony? Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do appreciate everybody coming up and explaining how important critical access is. And I believe it's very important, too, and I think everybody around this table agrees with that. Unfortunately, only from the safety net and MDA did I hear the crucial word is that they're committed to making this work. We're committed to coming to the table and making sure that all the stakeholders work on this to figure out something else, because obviously a one-month delay on services is unacceptable, but even no ability to get services, which we are facing out in Greater Minnesota, is completely unacceptable, and that's what we're facing right now. So I feel that we can work on this. We should be able to get something done. As you notice, a legislator is not involved in this, because then I'd have to go to state gov. But so I would say and I will commit 100% to this project, and any other legislator, anybody around this table that wants to be involved in this stakeholder group, I believe is extremely important. I would like some confirmation from the department about the
oral health delivery and reimbursement system.
Yes, my oral amendments here, and that there would be no fiscal note on that.
Is there someone from the department who could come up and speak to whether the Section 34 here would be able to be accommodated without a fiscal implication in the manner in which it was orally amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, we see no fiscal note with this. We're happy to convene with the same stakeholders that worked on the report and work on draft legislation.
Okay. Senator Rosen, does that?
Yes, thank you.
And so, Senator Rosen, also, you removed. Are you?
Mr. Chair, then I'm also going to do an oral amendment to take the sunset off. So, do I have to take off?
Senator Rosen moves that we strike line 1.2 through 3.9, leaving only the oral health delivery reimbursement system work group that DHS just said that they could and would do and convene with stakeholders and do for no cost. Any further questions of members?
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Rosen,
I look forward to bringing you something in front of this committee and Senator Sharon's committee that has been agreed upon by all the stakeholders, and that moves our critical access dental program forward because it's the right thing to do.
Good. On Senator Rosen's motion on the A8 as amended, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Hayden, you get your 826.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, Senator Rosen. I know we wanted you to be the last one on the subject, but I just have a quick one. This is so we're going to just go with the new A28 or the HHSOMNIA28. This is the emergency medical assistance, and this is the work that they've been doing with the Department of Health and the Safety Net Coalition. So I don't know if Mr. Godfrey or if anybody wants to just outline what the agreement that they came with.
Mr. Godfrey.
Mr. Chair, members, my name again is David Godfrey with Hennepin County Medical Center. The amendment before you maintains the original intent of the grant program that was in the First Amendment, which is to address outlier claims that some provider systems or any provider system may encounter due to the emergency medical assistance program. The amendment, instead of providing for an grant process with an application on a case-by-case basis, would actually provide a single lump sum grant at the end of the next fiscal year, which would be based upon any claims above $150,000 from the emergency medical assistance program. It would then take, it would determine each hospital's grant amount by looking at the proportion of those outlier claims as a percent of the total claims, and then taking that percent and applying it to the grant pool. So if you were a hospital that had 25% of all outlier claims, you would get 25% of the available grant dollars. And with this, we believe that it makes it less burdensome for the department to administer, and that there would not be a fiscal note associated with this.
Any questions on the A28 amendment? And MDH, and you believe you can accommodate this work within this structure?
We need to change this.
And then I'm informed by staff that on page 8, line 11 of the revisor's document that we're working off of, where it says the commissioner may use up to 12,000% of the appropriations, we need to change that to a percentage. And so we would, on page 8, line 11, strike the 12,000 and insert 1%. And with that, I think we'd be in good shape. Mr. Schoenbaum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Schoenbaum from the Health Department. We did work with the advocates on this in the hallway to come up with a manageable process here. It will be a little more complex than the previous version, but with that change to 1%, we'll have the resources to do this process. I suppose as long that 1% is now $20,000, which is what we need. So I suppose as long as the $2 million stays there, 1% will work just fine.
Okay. Any further discussion on the A28 amendment with the oral incorporation? I assume, Senator Hayden, you're comfortable with that oral
I'm very comfortable with that, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on the A8 as orally amended? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Any further amendments? So seeing none, I move that the HHS Omnibus Revisers document containing the HHS articles for the Omnibus Finance Bill be recommended to pass and referred to the full finance committee. On that motion, any further discussion? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I've been here 12 years, and I don't know if I have ever said this, that actually it's a very reasonable budget, and I appreciate your work on it, and I appreciate everybody else's work around this table. I'm a little disappointed that I didn't get to go nuclear on you about the 5%.
You had it all written, didn't you?
I had my speech ready. So I'm hoping that you will stand strong on these provisions, because I think you did a very good job at putting this together, and your staff. And I want to thank them all, too. You got a very good staff put together. But your bill is solid, so please hold steady to what the House is done to some of our good work, and I appreciate that. With that, Mr. Chair, I do ask for a roll call.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Rosen. I appreciate those comments. We worked very hard. Thank you for all your efforts. There's a lot of your work reflected in here as well. I think that, I tell people often, maybe it's just, I think we have the best committee in the Capitol here. We have really excellent conversations and a great deal of trust and respect for each other, and a fantastic staff. Yes. As well. So I want to thank all of the members who worked so hard on helping make this what I too believe is a really good bill, particularly for a supplemental year. So thanks to everyone, and the clerk will.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. I think, do I have to say roll call for the journal? I've never done, it's automatically enrolled in the journal.
What is that? There is some motion. I request Senator Rosen requests a roll call, and that such call be recorded in the journal.
Yes. Thank you.
And we will reflect that. And with that, any further comments? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Benson.
Yes.
Senator Brown.
Yes.
Senator Carlson. Senator Clarkson.
Yes.
Senator Eakin.
Yes.
Senator Franson.
Yes.
Senator Hayden.
Yes.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yes.
Senator Lurie.
Yes.
Senator Rosen.
Yes.
Senator Sharon.
And then roll back. I know Senator Carlson asked to be pulled out of transpo.
I can get him.
Senator Sharon, I know, said she was on an interview.
Where is Senator Sharon? They must have gone easily.
Yes.
with you. All right, just give me the count.
Yep. Crazy.
There being 9 votes in favor, 0 votes against, carries. Thank you, members. We stand adjourned.
Much better outcome.
Yeah.
You remember that, Bill?
I do. That's there.
All right.
Look forward to one.
You going to take this with you? Or are you going to leave
it? Sorry.